Oh yeah, this is West Coast Bias. I am Adam Nelson.
I am Samuel Paul.
Thank you for joining us once again.
Yes, second week, and here we are. We are now closer to opening day than we are from the World Series.
Oh yeah.
And that is a good thing.
It feels good. We're almost there. There's been some news.
Definitely some big news from the Giants signing... or I guess acquiring Andrew McCutchen from the Pirates.
It's a big acquisition.
Big acquisition and a big upgrade too in the outfield. And just today, January 19th, they introduced Evan Longoria as the new third baseman.
Sweeping up that hot corner.
Being able to come to an organization in a city and a place like this, you know, makes it a little bit easier. You know, obviously the recent success of the organization is something that sticks out in my mind and reason for me to believe that we're not far off from getting back to that point again.
Relatively recent success, sure. Okay, wow. There you go.
more recent than some teams for sure. Certainly Tampa Bay.
That's true. That's true. He seemed, you know, it seemed like he left on amicable terms. It seemed like they actually helped to make the transition easy for him, which is nice. I mean, is he the best player in Rays history? Yeah, he probably is.
Right? Probably is. 10 years. He's got some good numbers too.
Leading most of Tampa Bay Rays offensive numbers, I'm assuming.
1,471 hits over 10 seasons is nothing to.
Definitely not. And he is a California boy. He was born in Downey, which is Southern California, just outside of L.A. So, you know, maybe he's I bet he grew up a Dodger fan, which is interesting.
It is quite possible in Southern California, but we won't hold that against him.
It's a lifetime 270 hitter. You know, the guy's solid. He's also a solid defender at third, which is nice. Giants haven't had... Who was their third baseman last year?
Geez.
They had a few.
They had Edward Nunez.
Right.
Eduardo Nunez started the year and was traded to Boston for Pablo Sandoval back finished the year.
That's right. Where's Sandoval? Is he floating around? Is he losing 50 pounds again in the offseason only to gain it back by opening day?
I don't know. Maybe. It is certainly possible. I don't know. I haven't heard anything from... Sandoval this year. He is making big money from Boston regardless of where he ends up. I imagine that not too many teams would be interested in him at this point, but
you never know.
Certainly wouldn't object for Giants having him on the bench, come off the bench. I'd be a backup third baseman, first baseman.
A travel catcher. Day in the American League, maybe just have him DH or something. I don't know. That luxury. He's famous or infamous for losing 60 pounds in the winter to sort of look good again and fit into his belt that hopefully won't break again mid-swing. But
that was brutal. Fans in Toronto are brutiful. The next night someone brought in an extra long belt. That was so funny.
For those of you that don't remember, Pablo Sandoval literally snapped his belt
Mid-swing.
He almost swung out of his pants. Yes.
Literally.
Yeah, the baseball gods were, you know, making a little joke and also a little nudge. Hey, Pablo, you know, why don't you trim down a little bit?
Yeah.
It's okay. It's not going to hurt anybody.
No, not at all.
It's all right. He's still young. Right? He's still in his 20s, I believe, right? Maybe 29 now.
Pablo, I'm not sure how old he is. Mm-hmm. I didn't look that up. But
So Longoria, another famous... Giants third baseman, in your opinion, Matt Williams? Or?
Well, certainly Matt Williams was with the team for a long year. Great numbers, great years with the Giants.
Oh, yeah.
Looking at Matt Williams' number through the first 10 years with the Giants from 1987 through 1996, numbers comparable. Evan Longoria beats out Matt Williams in quite a few categories. More walks, more stolen bases, more hits, more home runs, more RBIs.
In the first 10 years? Is that?
In the first 10 years.
Yeah.
In the first 10 years, yeah. And that's all we have to compare. We have Evan Longoria for 10 years, and you know, Matt Williams played 17. So.
Matt Williams, yes, at 17, career batting average, 268, so virtually the same as Longoria's thus far. Longoria's two clicks better, but, you know, what's... And Matt Williams was a great third baseman. So
he was.
Maybe heralding in a new era for the Giants' hot corner.
He was. He came up with the great rookie classes, Will Clark, Robbie Thompson, Jose Uribe. Also, same rookie class, different team. Of course, Kevin Mitchell, but he was on the team for a couple of years during that same run.
What's the deal with Longoria? How long did they just have him for the season? I don't know the contract info here.
I don't have that contract info either in front of me. I know it's for a few years. I don't think it's an extremely long-term contract, but I'm sure it's fair for both the club and the player.
Yeah, he's 32 years old, so he's, you know, definitely, I wouldn't even say the twilight. I'm sure he still has a lot of good years left in him, so he's still got the pop, still hit 20 home runs last year, right?
Yeah. I think overall it's pretty sad that we're considering players 31, 32 to be over the hill.
Well, it's true, but, you know, lately it seems to be the... young guy, it's young man's game, you know.
Well, certainly, and players over 32 generally do tend to have their numbers drop just a little bit, and most players are done by 34, 35, and really only the truly special ones play much longer than that.
That's true. It's I think it's something like in the year 2000, it was a little over 60% of the players were over 30. And now, today, it's 65% that are under 30. So definitely the times have changed. Shifts have come in. Guys also get shorter contract periods now. There's been enough of these long-term contracts that have been paid out in the last 5-10 years that have... proven that they're not always the best investment, which is why JD Martinez is still floating around, right?
Well, quite possibly. There's a lot of players still that a lot of notable players still that haven't been signed, and there has been a lot of recent long-term contracts that really haven't turned out all that well.
Supposedly Red Sox offered JD Martinez 100 mil for 5 years. Supposedly. It's not really confirmed. I'm looking for more along the lines of 30 mil a year. Of course, Cespedes, that deal, I think he kind of wants a Cespedes deal. I think he got a lot. And, you know, if you're JD, can't really blame him for that. His numbers are better than Cespedes. He's not really a plus in the outfield. Cespedes, that's where he definitely ekes out that win. But his batting numbers, since they both came up around the same time... Cespedes had a really good year with the A's, and then he had a couple down years, and then he had the last 2 years were monster years also. So that deal, I don't know if we're going to see that again. The Mets just wanted him bad, and back then, you know, there wasn't the sort of pool that there is now.
Yeah, you know, interestingly enough, I did not see Cespedes' name come up when I was searching for these long-term contracts. Do you have the details of the Cespedes deal?
Yes.
Sorry. I mean the names that I found in terms of hitters, Chris with a C Davis.
Chris Davis, yeah.
Jason Hayward, Jacoby Ellsbury, Robinson Cano, Prince Fielder, and Albert Pujols.
Yeah, Cespedes got $110 million over 4 years.
Yeah, see that's not this long term deal.
No, I mean, we're talking it's a Chris, nice deal.
Chris Davis got 7 years, $161 million.
Okay.
Jason Hayward got 8 years, 184. Robinson Cano got 10 years at 240, as did Albert Pujols, and Prince Fielder got 9 years, $214 million.
Uh-huh, I know. So these are all old.
He's not even playing anymore.
Right. He's done. He's retired.
Injury retiring, mm-hmm. but
this is, I think, what the clubs have learned. They've learned that, you know, these long-term contracts don't really seem to benefit them. Chris Davis with a C. Again,
He certainly hasn't brought a World Series for that price.
No, I think he probably got that after he hit 52 home runs or whatever, right? And then, but he's still batting 230, 240, right? Striking out over 200 times a season. It's just not. I think they're realizing that. Who else was on that list? I'm sorry.
Chris Davis, Jason Hayward.
Jason Hayward. Another one. Another one.
8 years, $184 million.
Jesus, that's $23 million a year. So Cespedes is 4 year at 110 is $27.5 million.
Right.
That's pretty high. Although I would take Cespedes over anybody that you just mentioned, except for maybe Prince Fielder in his prime, but that was a long time ago. So clubs are, you know, rightfully being cautiously optimistic about people like JD Martinez. It seems like Boston is going to be his team, but I don't know. I think he even said he's willing to go into spring training without a team, you know.
He has. I think that these players, you know, they want a longer terms of year. They need to come up with some sort of compromise going on, like incentive-based contracts and options.
Goal-based, so like if you get...
Yeah, so we'll give you 4 years, $100 million a year, or $100 million for the whole year, $27 million a year. And then at the end of four seasons, I'll give you a 2-year option.
Yeah, that's actually perfect.
And see if you want to stay here, we want to keep you. Great, let's just already have the term set up for another 2 years, and that's 6 years, and maybe another couple options after that. Incentive based. And player stays good, and player stays, no one's really locked in for that long time, but it's certainly possible.
So 5 year, $125 million with an opt-out clause after 2 years is the answer. You think so?
Well, you can give the player, you know, 4 or 5 years, and then, you know...
5 year contract. Give him,
5 year contract with like a club option for the 6th year.
I think that's what's going to happen.
It's possible. Something's got to give.
Because, 5 year, 125.
I mean, because there's a lot of players out there. It's not just
Moustakas, Kane, Hosmer, Frazier. You know, Frazier isn't getting any attention right now. I'm sure. Maybe
Jose Bautista.
Right. Too. That's true. Although, you know, he hit under 250 last year, right? It's just. There's a lot out there, and so I guess maybe everybody's sort of waiting to see what everybody else is going to do.
Right, and then we're going to have a much bigger free agent class next year as well. A lot of players, a lot of good players come off the books.
That's right. Jose Bautista is 37 years old. Be interesting to see him go anywhere. I can't see him going anywhere else, but then again, you know, maybe somewhere like the Twins or something. 2017... barely had an OBP over 3. His batting average was 203. That's
Bautista.
Yeah,
in 2017. Bat flip aside is not living up to his billing.
No, and that's 587 at bats. I mean, yeah, he's definitely on the lower end of that list. Interesting to see where Lorenzo Cain's going to go, but it's okay. What else you got for me today?
What else I got? I saw an interesting comparison between the other Giants acquisition this week, Andrew McCutchen.
It's a big deal. That's a big deal.
Barry Bonds. I'm trying to compare his numbers through the years with the Pirates.
They're very similar. They have very similar stories.
Similar stories, yes. Numbers, you know, we're talking about 9 years for McCutchen versus 7 years. For Barry Bonds, the way that it shakes out, 9 years, McCutchen's numbers look almost better than Bonds, but you extrapolate out another 2 years for Bonds to include the 93 and the strike-shortened 94 season.
Right.
And Bonds' 8-9, ninth year in the league with the Giants, numbers shift quite a bit. Interesting comparison just straight up hits. 9 years, Andrew McCutcheon, 1463. Bonds, it's 7 years, 984. And after two more years, it's 1287.
Wow.
Home runs, after 9 years, McCutcheon has 203. Bonds, after seven, had 178. And at the end of the short 94 season, had 261.
It doesn't even make sense.
It really doesn't. But, you know, that's Barry Bonds. This is what Jesus. RBIs for McCutcheon through 9 years, 725. Barry Bonds, after seven, had 556, but after nine, had 760. Then to 93, Giants were a great team, won 103 games.
How about stolen bases between the two of them?
Stolen bases after seven or after 9 years, McCutcheon has 171. Barry Bonds after seven had 251.
Wow,
I'm already basically almost half of what he ended up with his career. He got in his first 7 years in the league. He went to the Giants. His godfather and his father sounded and says, "Barry, got to be hitting home runs now." And so that's what
enough
he did.
With the dancing on the bases.
That's what the bases. I mean,
you're gonna be trotting the bases from now on. Yes.
No, I mean, next 2 years he ended up with 309, and of course he ended up with 514 for his career.
Mm-hmm. Those are impressive numbers.
All right, well, one of the telling stats I found really interesting about Barry Bonds. Barry Bonds ended up with 688 intentional walks. 688 at bats.
I'm assuming he leads all of baseball.
Probably. Not confirmed, but probably.
Yes.
688 is more than his average at bats per year was. And so that's a full season of at bats he got in. Intentionally walked. So we're talking, you know, easily another 40 home runs.
Yeah, he leads all of baseball history in walks and intentional walks.
Yeah, it's pretty silly.
Oh yeah, and home runs. Yeah, 2,558 walks, 688 intentional walks. It's kind of crazy, you know, and it wasn't all toward the end of his career. I mean, it was mainly in 2004 where he had 120, but even in 1993, he had 43 intentional walks, and he didn't pass that again until 2002 when he had 68. So it wasn't like, I mean, people have always been afraid of him, basically.
Yeah, he's always been an excellent hitter. No one really wanted to face him, but earlier in his career, didn't intentionally walk him as much because he was a stolen base. So you put him on base, you take second.
Right.
251 times in 7 years. So it's, and then once he stopped stealing bases, then he got walked more. I don't think he had too many stolen bases in 04.
No. In 2004, just stolen bases, he had six. Actually more than I was expecting.
Six. So how many times was he walked with a runner on?
You know,
just first base was open. Now yeah. There's two runners on.
He was only caught stealing once. That's
another reason why Jeff Kent had so many RBIs.
Jeff Kent. Love me some Jeff Kent.
He was great.
You know, it's that time of the year and they're talking about Baseball Hall of Fame. Hmm. And this is always a very... I never really know how to feel about Baseball Hall of Fame. You know, it's a few good, there's a few bad, but Chipper Jones is looking like the obvious first rounder and probably gonna garner at least 95% of the vote, if not more. Chipper Jones has, especially for a switch hitter, has had some pretty amazing numbers. He joins Babe Ruth, Stan Musial, Lou Gehrig, Mel Ott, and Ted Williams as one of only six players in Major League Baseball history to record a 300 batting average, a 400 on-base percentage, and a 500 slugging percentage. with 450 home runs, 1,500 walks, 1,600 RBIs, and 1,600 runs. I know that's a bit of a mouthful, but it's very elite company right there.
It really is. No, Chipper Jones, I think it's Chipper Jones. Think I don't want to pitch that guy. I don't want to see him coming up with runners on and
definitely
game on the line. That's he was definitely good. There's no doubt about it.
The highest percentages, and correct me if I'm wrong, and please contact us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. The highest garnered percentage for the Baseball Hall of Fame is Ken Griffey Jr. with 99.3%, followed by Tom Seaver, 98.8%, Nolan Ryan, 98.8%, Cal Ripken, 98.5%. Chipper's looking like he might hit the 98. When you think about Greg Maddux was at 97, Randy Johnson was at 97. You know, I mean, again, this is all, I don't know. It's there's a lot here that doesn't really matter, but I don't know. I like Chipper Jones a lot. He was always fun to watch. His as a switch hitter, maybe the best in the modern era. His career against left-handed hitters. Was 304, 391, 498. And against right-handed hitters, 303, 405, 541. He has a higher average against lefties, but obviously he's more power against the righties. But just hitting 304 and 303, respectively, from either side of the plate, it's just...
Yeah, that's an incredible eye. That's incredible swing.
Yeah.
That's a guy who's tried to get out.
Yeah, among switch hitters who have compiled at least 5,000 plate appearances, he ranks third in home runs, third in batting average, fourth in OBP, third in slugging, and third in OPS, all time. So
Chipper Jones is an obvious choice.
Yes.
But what about his longtime teammate of the same name? Brother from a different mother?
Andrew Jones?
Andrew Jones.
Andrew Jones was really good. I don't know. I don't think time is going to be nice to him. Put it that way.
One of only six outfielders in history to earn at least 10 Gold Glove awards.
Wow.
Reached the 20 home run plateau 10 times. Leading NL home run 2005 with 51.
He led all the NL in
05 with 51. Wow. Drove in 100 or more runs 5 times. And 128 in 05.
Well, he's not up. He's not up yet, right?
He is.
Oh, he is.
He is on the ballot this year.
Oh.
Yeah. I think it's his first year of eligibility.
Yeah, I think he's going to have to wait a couple more.
Not first ballot, but...
I don't know. Well, there's... It's always weird because I never really understand how they decide, right? Or how they decide to exclude, I guess, to be more clear, right?
How they decide to exclude
certain players and not others because of certain things, like obviously Barry Bonds.
Well, it becomes a personal choice that comes down to the Baseball Writers Association of America.
Right.
And what they feel is Hall of Fame worthy. But as far as eligibility and remaining on the ballot, apparently you need to have at least 5% of the vote every year that you're on the ballot to remain on the next year.
So Clemens and Bonds they're still getting at least 5%.
They're hovering around their last numbers that I saw regarding Clemens and Bonds. They were both in high 50s, yeah. Around like 58%.
Well, it's true. So
inching closer.
What changes for some of these voters, for some of these writers, elect Jeff Bagwell easily, to elect Pudge Rodriguez easily, and then not its personality, right? I mean, I know we've talked about this
personality.
Before.
Personality, I think, definitely.
It kind of should have
factors
nothing to do
into
with it.
No, it shouldn't. It really shouldn't. It should just be about the numbers themselves.
Yeah, because if you want to say, hey, if you've ever been popped for PEDs, you're completely ineligible. Right off the bat, it needs to be consistent. It needs to be either or.
Bonds never, actually tested positive for anything.
That's true. It's true.
He's suspected. He probably did, but
yes,
you can't say definitively that he did. He's never admitted to it. It's never been proven that he did, at least not knowingly.
Yeah. Well, you know, another one that I always think about is Manny Ramirez. Manny Ramirez, maybe the best right-handed hitter last 30 years, at least. And I can't see him getting on anytime soon, and I don't know why. I mean, Manny is... It's fun to just play with and just look at Manny's numbers. His numbers are unbelievable.
Yeah.
I know he's a very polarizing figure on and off the field. You know, clubhouse, whatever. He causes the management and ownership a lot of stress.
Dreadlock wigs aside, and sales thereof.
Oh, man. In 1999, he drove in 165 RBIs.
That's insane.
The most in a season by anybody since 1938. It's crazy. He hit every year. He had 30 homers and 100 RBIs 12 times. It's crazy, his numbers. He, him, Babe Ruth, and Ted Williams are in a very elite club. 500 home runs, 500 doubles, with a .310 career batting average. It's unbelievable. There's only them three. The Babe, Ted, and man. And Ted Williams was insane.
Ted Williams, yeah. No doubt. He was...
Ted Williams had a 1,000 OPS in every season he played from when he was 20 to when he was 39. Every season. Manny had over 1,000 from 1999 to 2004. Again, it's just insane that a guy like him isn't in there. But you know, what are you gonna do? I don't know. I just love the stories of how the pitchers would say that, like, Manny would pretend to look fooled on a pitch in spring training, so that he would get that exact pitch once the season started.
Bonds would do that too.
It's brilliant.
Bonds would do that too.
It's just like they're both the kinds of hitters that you just, if you're a pitcher, you're fucking terrified. You're so scared.
I remember hearing a story about Barry Bonds from the Giants broadcaster Mike Kruko, said that he was on the field one day, and he was answering questions. Someone had given him a copy of his 1987 Topps baseball card. Picture showed Mike Kruko in the middle of his windup, with a leg up, about to deliver the pitch. And he was looking at it, answering. Bonds walked behind him, looked at the card, and said, "Curveball," and kept on walking. Mike Kruko's like, "Wait, what? How do you know?"
That's that knowledge. It's yeah. Barry, everybody knew he came prepared. You know, Manny, it didn't seem like he was coming prepared. It seemed like he couldn't care less. It seemed like he could
roll out of bed and hit 300.
Yeah. Or like, if, you know, if he gets struck out, he would just walk back like nothing happened. And that would frustrate the pitchers to just a crazy degree. Bill James claimed that it was possible that Manny used to get into full counts on purpose with runners at first. That way the runner would be off with the pitch, and then he could score on the assumed double that Manny knew he was going to hit. It's just crazy.
Over 500 of them, right?
It's unbelievable. You know, the Manny stories are endless. And so, again, you know, Manny doesn't seem like a Clemens or a Bonds. A guy who is like a dick to everybody for most of his career. But he just seemed kind of like aloof, and maybe it was frustrating to have to deal with him, but I don't think anybody like hated Manny, right? I don't know. It's strange. I hope we see him in there. You know, what are you going to do?
But big bad Vlad Guerrero, also on the ballot this year, second year of eligibility.
I like Vlad. I like, you know, he was one of the, besides, I guess, I can only think of Evan Gattis now as the only guy that bats without batting gloves, and Vlad did it his whole career, right? I mean, who else is there? I can't think of anybody. Not a reason.
Not too many. But that is a notable thing.
You're just golfing. Like, some days he'd be golfing, some days he'd be playing baseball. It didn't matter, but he'd still hit the damn ball, you know.
No matter where you threw it, the shoe tops, or if it was at the eyes, he could hit it, and probably hit it a long way.
He was good. He was really good. Is his son's about to start playing, or he's in the minor leagues? I think.
I don't know anything about his son.
Vlad Guerrero Jr. Thought so. Yeah, and also Bo Bichette, who I'm assuming Vlad Guerrero Jr. is 18. Bo Bichette's 19. I'm assuming Bo Bichette is the son of Dante Bichette.
Maybe.
No, I don't know.
I don't know.
That's gonna be a tough group of kids coming up.
Right now, sons of major leaguers generally tend to do pretty well.
What about Barry? Barry have any kids?
Yes. I don't know what Nikolai Bonds is doing, but I'm sure he's playing baseball somewhere.
He's got his son's name Nikolai? Has he got a Russian wife or something? Or? Anyway.
Possible. I think she was blonde, so, you know.
Prince Fielder, obviously, had a great career. Ken Griffey Jr., maybe the best of the juniors, or
Cal Ripken Jr.
That's true. Cal Ripken Sr.
He managed the Orioles for sure when he and Bill Ripken were playing in the infield for the O's.
Did Sr. play?
I'm pretty sure that he did. Mm-hmm. It'd be easy enough to find out here, but
It must be difficult to come up in your father's shoes. It's also Tony Gwynn Jr. You know, he was okay. He played with the Dodgers a little while. He's fast. He didn't really have. He obviously didn't have his dad's speed by any means. But you know, it's a hell of a pedigree. I don't know anything about Griffey's kids, but he was a coach and manager. He spent 36 years with the Baltimore organization. Cal Ripken Sr. He played in the farm system in 57, but it looks
never actually made it.
No. Wow, he looks a lot like him, though. Let's see. I don't know.
Well, regardless of who makes the Hall of Fame, who doesn't this year, it's still quite an honor for a player to be named to the Hall of Fame. And that's a reasonable benchmark of who were great players. Of course, in terms of famous names that you think of and who should be in the Hall of Fame and who isn't in the Hall of Fame, but amazing immortal names that get thrown around sometimes. I was watching production about Reggie Jackson on the MLB Network earlier this week, and they started talking about 1971 All-Star Game, which Reggie Jackson hit a famous home run off of, hit the light standards up in the Old Tiger Stadium in Detroit. And some of the names that were talked about involved in that game, not just Reggie Jackson, but I'm talking about a fantasy lineup.
1971
fantasy lineup, All-Star, the All-Star game of All-Star, yeah. All-Star games, just 17 players and coaches involved are in the Hall of Fame. Probably more than that should be in the Hall of Fame, but the names are incredible. Whether or not they're in the Hall of Fame or not, in the American League, Rod Carew, Reggie Jackson, Carl Yastrzemski, Vida Blue, Jim Parmel, Ray Fosse, Harmon Killebrew, Brooks Robinson, Frank Robinson.
Wow.
In the National League, Doc Ellis, Reggie Jackson hit the home run off of, Willie McCovey, Willie Mays, Juan Marichal, Lou Brock, Roberto Clemente, Johnny Bench, Hank Aaron, Jed Torrey, Pete Rose, Willie Stargell. These are like amazing players. That's it. I mean, how many of these players would you like to have on your team? Any of them.
And Reggie Jackson is not in the Hall of Fame? Is that what you're saying?
He is in the Hall of Fame. He's in the Hall of Fame as a Yankee.
Oh, okay.
He's one of them. Not all of those all of those names that I just mentioned are in the Hall, but a good majority of them are, and certainly they're very famous baseball names, immortal in a lot of respects.
Looks like he is. Does he have the most strikeouts in baseball history? 2,597. Maybe.
Who?
Reggie Jackson.
Reggie Jackson? Is that a record?
I think it is. Should double check me on that, but maybe career. I mean, he did have a very long career, but yes, Reggie Jackson in 21 years. Yeah, he's the most strikeouts of all time. It's a very distinctive.
Such a dubious distinction.
Not the best, but you know, Chipper Jones had a lot of strikeouts, but he also had more walks than strikeouts, and that's kind of all that matters, I guess, you know.
It comes to on base percentage, sure.
Yeah, Chipper Jones struck out 1,400 times, but he walked 1,500 times, so you know, it helps. But yeah, that's tough to be on top of that list. Can you name any of the top five all-time strikeout leaders? I'm going to give you 10 seconds. just one.
Off the top of my head?
Mm-hmm.
No. I'll be honest, no. I don't think that I can name any.
They're all in the modern era. They're all in the modern era. It's Jim Thome, Adam Dunn, Sammy Sosa, and A-Rod.
All right.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, I definitely believe that.
Adam Dunn is at 2,379 in only 14 seasons. Everybody else at least had 20, except for Sosa.
Yeah. So, Barry Bonds is 22 years, 1,539.
Pretty damn good.
Almost half the number of walks that he had. A little bit more than half.
That's really good then. Yeah. And you include the intentional walks, of course, too.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's
yeah. What else you got?
What else I got? I got some questions for you about fantasy baseball. If we want this podcast to focus on fantasy baseball, we should start talking some fantasy baseball.
Well, you know, it's an aspect. It's I guess some people have probably drafted. I don't know yet, though. I guess I don't know how you could. Oh, I guess it doesn't really matter what teams these free agents go on. Well, it kind of does, though. To determine. I mean, I like to wait as long as possible. I like to wait till, you know, end of February, maybe mid-March even, to just so you could see, you know, guys get hurt.
Right.
Obviously, like Hunter Pence, right? His arm shattered a couple years back in spring training. But yeah, questions from a newbie to I haven't been doing it that long, but
I've had some success,
yeah.
So when we're talking about fantasy baseball for this purpose of this podcast, we are talking about rotisserie league fantasy.
Yes, in my opinion, that's the only way to play.
So what exactly is rotisserie league fantasy baseball? What does that mean?
Rotisserie, just basically, in a nutshell, just means cumulative points throughout the entire season. So you're not, like in football, fantasy football is probably the most popular, right? And so then that's weekly, there's one game a week, and so then you usually, in that, and I know I think you can do it roto style there too, but you have one team and you play another team, it's all random or whatever, right? And so you have a schedule, just like in football, you play one team each week. But, you know, with baseball, there's 162 games, and it's over 180 days. And so you can do it head-to-head, which is what they call it, when you play week-to-week against one team. And then at the end of the year, you have a record, a win-loss record, and I guess that's how you determine who wins. But it just, for me, it just doesn't seem to make any sense with baseball. I know a lot of people like to do that. Maybe it's more engaging. But I don't need any more motivation to be engaged with baseball. You know, I'm fully engaged as it is. Fantasy does make you watch a lot more baseball, so if you have a fear that you're watching too much, you'll probably do good, but I guarantee you will be watching a lot more. Like, I watched a lot of Indians and Reds games last year. I have really no dog in that fight. I couldn't care less about the teams, but I watched a lot of those games, you know. So yeah, so it's rotisserie is every single day. There's no wins or losses record. It's just you pick your team, I pick my team, everybody else picks theirs. Everybody has an equal shot of picking players. You do a draft, and may the best manager win, because that's really what it comes down to. And I think that that's the fantasy. The fantasy is saying, oh, I know more about baseball than you, and I can prove it.
Sure. So I'm going to pick these players, yes, these players that I want on my team, and
right,
the amount of points that they accumulate throughout the year will show that I picked better players than you.
Exactly. And not just picked better players, because the draft is important, but it's not everything. It's how you manage your team. It's because you have a bench and you have starters, and, you know, it's, you can look at projections all you want, but baseball is baseball. I mean, you, Scooter Jeanette can go out and hit 4 home runs in one day and then not hit another home run for the next 3 months, you know. It's, and obviously you can't predict that, so there is some amount of luck, sure, but just like in real life, there's some amount of luck, right? So it seems like that's the closest and the most purest, the purest way to play. It's my favorite way to play, and I love playing with as many stats as possible also, again, to mimic real life. This is how all fantasy sports started. It wasn't called fantasy back then, 1980 or so. Daniel Okrent and a bunch of other New York publishers and writers who were all friends just decided, wanted to make this game. Basically wanted to prove who was the better baseball fan, I guess. Who knew the most. And these are all really erudite, smart guys who are really analytical and everything. And so Daniel Okrent, so the story goes, he drafted up the rules and on a plane ride from like New England to New York, and that was it. And back then they would have to the first time they drafted and every time after, they went to a rotisserie chicken restaurant in New York, and they like rented out the back room, and they had their draft, and it was all by hand, and you go around, and you know, and it takes hours. I mean, it takes hours even now when it's automated, if you have 10, 12, 14 teams, but back then it's all, you have to write it all out, you have a big board, you know, player values, and oh man, everybody's got their spreadsheets.
Have to scour all the box scores across the country to find out how your players do.
Yeah, and that's how they would do it. They would do the box scores printed in the newspaper every day, and that's how they would accumulate their points. So it wasn't maybe as extensive as it is now. You know, they weren't really measuring stats like strikeouts per 9 innings or walks and hits per innings pitched, and you know, fielding, independent pitching or whatever, which is what you can do now. I like that. For me, it seems like the more variables, the better, because again, that's kind of like playing God, right? It's kind of like being the manager of your fantasy team. Of course, it all blew up after that, and they wrote a book with the rules. I don't think any of them get any money or anything for creating this billion-dollar empire, but they created some joy for the world, and I do appreciate it. And now with the computers, it's just, you know. But I only do one league. I don't do the daily things, although after winning a few years in a row, I feel like maybe I should start doing those daily fantasy things, but it seems like a wormhole. And I don't know. I take a lot of time and energy, and because it's just like friends, you know, and most of the people that I play with.
Do you play for money? Or is it?
Yeah, there's some money, but it's mainly about the bragging rights, you know. All right. And I guess that's why I only do one league, because I want to make sure I win that one. I want to put it all in there, you know. I don't know. I talk to people that have multiple leagues and they never seem to win. But the guys that have one, maybe two, they seem to do a lot better. I don't know. Because if it's how stressful.
Much,
yeah.
How much time would you say that you devote to fantasy baseball every day?
I don't know. You know, some days you devote more, some weeks you're in it every day, and then some weeks, you know, maybe you're not, maybe like in summer or something, and you know, life happens, and you get busy, and you move, and you get a new job, whatever, you know, you get married, you have kids, but it's nice to have that. It's usually at the end of the night. I usually look at it at the end of the night for the next day. I like to make the decisions the day before, and then, you know, obviously if something happens, if someone gets scratched, I'll change it last minute, but generally speaking, I don't like to tinker with it day of. I don't like to overthink, you know. Usually first thought, best thought, and usually you go with your gut. And if you can't go with your gut, or if you can't trust your gut, then you're going to get last place every year. Probably. The over-tinkering, you know. But are you going to join this year? Are you going to play the game?
Yeah, if you've got room for me.
I think you should. Yeah.
I mean, might as well. I'm going to be doing the work anyway, right?
That's true.
So what stats do you use in the league? Are there any particularly most important stats that you look up above the rest? Any key telling stats that may dictate what the rest of them look like?
So we do 20. We do 20 stats, 10 for offense, 10 for pitching. For batters, we do runs, home runs, RBIs, stolen bases, walks, strikeouts, which is a negative stat, counts against you, total bases, errors, which is another negative stat, batting average, and slugging percentage. We don't do OBP. I kind of like OBP, but you know, what are you going to do? We have walks already in there, so.
So when it comes to percentages, like, I mean, I can get a point for a run that's scored by a player. You get a point for a home run. You get a point for RBI.
Right.
When it comes to these percentages, the slugging and the batting average, how are those computated into points?
So if you lead in any category, and say you're in a 10-team league, okay? If you lead in any category, you get 10 points for that category. The guy in second place gets 9 points. The guy in third place gets 8.
Is this per week or per day?
It's all cumulative. So every day, every hour, really. It's every minute it's updated. It's alive. So if you watch your stat tracker or whatever during the day, it'll have all the games going. And your score will literally change with every minute, because some guy is going to get 3 walks. Some other team's going to get 3 walks, and you were only leading by 2 walks, and now you're in third place instead of second place. And so it's all very fluid, and it's all in real time. So with batting average, whatever your cumulative team batting average
is. It's like all of your 9 starters are...
All of your players, period, yeah.
Well, you don't...
Who have played a game, who have at least 1 plate appearance, yeah.
In that game?
Total, the whole season.
Well, but day to day.
Oh, well, day to day, you can look, but it's not really...
So batting average isn't counted until the end of the year?
No, it's counted every hour, like I'm saying. Like, it's a constantly changing...
So if your entire team has a higher average batting average, and then the rest of the teams in your league, you get 10 points in that category.
Exactly.
Regardless of what that number is.
Yeah, I mean, it could be 235, but if you're leading everybody with 235, that's a pretty sad league. But, yeah, you're still in first place. But then you could be last place in home runs, and then the guy who has a really low average has a shitload of home runs, and now you guys are pretty much even, you know. So it seems like it's the best way to even out the playing field and to give teams more of a chance to win if they're from behind. And it also values players that you might not normally value if you're only doing 5 stats. Usually they do batting average, runs, or just batting average, home runs, hits. I don't even know. Honestly, I don't even know what most leagues do.
Standard newspaper.
Right. Yeah.
Box score.
Yeah. Although I don't think they usually do OBP or slugging. I don't know. Yeah, no, but I like the total bases. I like that for guys that get a lot of doubles, but they don't get a lot of home runs, you know? I don't know. And then for pitching, we don't do wins. I don't really like wins anymore. It's sort of a weird stat. A guy could come in and throw one inning and get a win, you know? So we do complete games. And quality starts. Quality starts are important. That's 6 runs, 6 innings or more with 3 runs or fewer. We do hits, which is a negative stat, of course. Walks, which is a negative stat. Strikeouts, total bases, which is a negative stat. ERA, whip, K per 9, and on-base percentage against. This was a category that we played with a little bit. We used to do inherited runners advanced, which is a weird, very specific stat that is another negative stat, and usually only affects relievers. So we change it to OBPA, which is just on-base percentage against. You know, with the pitching ones, there's a lot of other ones like FIP, fielding independent pitching. But, you know, you sort of just pick and choose, you know, whichever ones you want. But it's kind of fun to play with that.
Is an on-base percentage against, though, very similar to WHIP?
Yeah, not necessarily, though. I mean, you could hit a guy. Right, or
that doesn't count against the whip.
I don't think so. No, because the whip is just walks and hits per inning pitched. Yeah, I guess you're right though. I guess it is a bit redundant. Maybe we'll look into that. I don't know. But it's not because, so like for instance, I'm just looking 2 years ago, the team whip was 108 and the OBPA was 275. So you're really just looking at a different value, I guess, you know, a batting average sort of thing. It's just a different way of looking at it. Yeah, I guess you're right. It's pretty
well, just the way that those, those acronyms,
yeah, it's just
stack up against each other. There's a very, very similar. It seems like a very similar stat, but
it's kind of like strikeouts or strikeout per nine innings. Also, you know, it's similar. They inform each other, but it's nice. It's nice to have both. I don't know.
Are you doing just straight strikeouts and then strikeouts per nine?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Which aren't always going to be the same, because you could have a guy like Max Scherzer who's getting at least 10 a game, or you could just have a lot of relievers that get a lot, and then that raises your K per nine, but you don't have a big total, you know? And so somebody else can pass you on total strikeouts, but they can still have a low K per nine if it's sort of, you know, spread around a lot, you know?
Right. All of my fantasy sports experience has been in fantasy football. Now with fantasy football, I'm looking for a free agent plug-in for an injured player or whatever. I look for particular stats that to me seem to project a large fantasy point output for the week. At least, maybe not large, but at least reasonably respectable mm-hmm. point total at the end of the week. Are there any stats that you would tend to look at if you're looking for a replacement hitter or a replacement pitcher more than the others that would tend to inform, yeah, you know, where on the spectrum is this a good player to pick up based on one or two stats?
Well, this is why I like playing rotisserie, because it's cumulative throughout the year, so you can give yourself goals, sort of. So say you're leading an average and runs by like a lot, by 30-40 points. Okay, so now you can maybe relax on that, but you're really lacking in stolen bases. But there's the guy right above you, stolen bases, only has like 8 more than you. Okay, but the 8 stolen bases without him getting one is pretty difficult. So maybe you'll be willing to bench or to even drop a guy who hits for a lot of average but doesn't really do anything else to get a guy that's really fast if he's a free agent. And you'll sacrifice a little bit of your average just to get the stolen base count up. So it just sort of depends on where you're at in the season, what you need personally, you know, and you don't have to worry about it week by week. You could look at it like that. That's the way I like to look at it. Like sometimes, and again, you know, like a lot of this is looking at player stats, but a lot of this is also looking at the other teams in my league, you know, and I think I freak them out sometimes, but I'm looking at their teams almost just as much as I'm looking at mine, you know, because I need to see what I need to do better. And there's a part of me that thinks, well, don't even look at anybody else. Just try to play the best game you can. But like you're saying, sometimes there are stats that I really shouldn't be compounding. Like if I'm leading in home runs, which I did in this year, for instance, I had 287 at the end of the season. The guy in second had 270. So I had 17 more home runs. That's, you know, once August or September comes, you're pretty much guaranteed that you're going to win that category. So then you can kind of go worry about other things, you know? I mean, I'm not saying I would drop, like, you know, Mike Trout or anything like that, but if you needed, say, like, another pitcher, maybe, like, maybe just to boost up your K per nine, you might get rid of another guy and just bring in another reliever, because relievers only pitch for an inning, maybe two, and they'll get two or three strikeouts. Guy gets 3 strikeouts in one inning, that's 27 K per nine right there. Now, it's going to help out your starters. It's going to help out everything. So you kind of just have to look at what you need and also look at what's attainable, you know, because if the next guy K per nine is, you know, half a whole point up, you're never going to catch that. So you might as well not even try. And I shouldn't be telling you all these secrets if you're going to enjoy it. they're not secrets. It's just the way of looking at it. It's just, right, you know, how you want to play. the game. And again, putting in the time, chances are you'll get rewarded for it, unless you're just completely baseball ignorant. I don't know. I don't really know that's possible if you're going to be playing it. But does that answer your question? I don't know. It's very long-winded. I don't know.
I think that it does. I think that it does to do pretty well. I think my notes are satisfied here for this week. I don't have anything.
Curiosity fully satiated. Alrighty. Now just don't beat me next year, and I'll be all right with that. I'm not worried.
No promises.
Although the first year I did do fantasy, I was really intimidated, and so I overcompensated, I think, and I ended up winning. So it might have been beginner's luck, but then I made sure that the second year it wasn't by winning again. But I think you'll probably be similar to that. I can already tell you're very analytical. You seem to do well with numbers, so you know.
And sometimes.
And please give us comments or suggestions at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com.
That is our email. Any questions you may have, any comments, suggestions, something that you'd like to hear us talk about in upcoming episodes, we'd love to hear from you.
We would.
For that, I have to ask and answer a trivia question.
Ooh,
or
is
trivia
that time?
Question from last episode.
That time.
Who is the only pitcher since 1920 to throw a shutout and hit a home run in his major league debut?
Wow, that's a tough one.
It is. That's what we asked last week. Didn't get any emails.
We got two. We got one from Jim from Sacramento. He said Jim Bunning.
No, that is not correct. And what else did we get?
We got a aerosol. Aerosol 97 said Kevin Brown.
Kevin Brown, that is also incorrect.
Sorry, guys.
Correct answer to this question is Jason Jennings. Jason Jennings for the Colorado Rockies on August 23rd, 2001.
Oof.
Hit a home run while pitching a shutout in his major league
in Colorado?
I believe so.
Wow.
I don't know for certain. Wow. I didn't find the location of this event. It was just pitching for the Rockies.
Wow. Well, no winners this week. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. And you will not get a free t-shirt nor an invitation. But
however, thank you for playing the game. And if you would indulge me, I have another question for this week. It is more locally oriented to us here in San Francisco. Who took the first plate appearance in Oakland A's history?
Who took the first plate appearance in Oakland A's history? All right. We will hear that next time.
Yes.
Get the answer for that. I'm excited.
And in the meantime, baseball is life, and the rest is just details.
I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul. We'll see you next week.